All right, all right. Can we give Jesus a praise offering out here to other churches? Come on. You guys are in trouble. They gave the worship pastor a microphone for other than singing. So I apologize ahead of time. You guys can be seated. We're going to talk today about the cost of your gifting. Because usually to get something, you have to give something. Jesus gave the ultimate. He gave his life for us, so that he can have a lot of brothers and sisters hanging out with him. You guys ever thought about it that way? Jesus is our brother. He's the ultimate big brother. But anyway, we're going to watch a video today, so don't worry, I'm not going to be up here the whole time. The guy's name is Steve Furlick, I think, right? Steve Furlick, am I pronouncing that right? But anyway, it's a great message. It's about Elijah and Elijah. I have to say it slow, just like this guy, you'll see. But it's about sometimes you know you got a gifting, you know something's there, but sometimes to get it, you got to wait. Or sometimes to get it, you have to actually step out and do something. And then God will reward that in your obedience. But let me open us up in prayer and prepare our hearts for this message. It's good. Hang with us. I know it's a video, but you guys are going to be blessed. Heavenly Father, thank you for this day. Thank you for our blessings. Thank you for your grace and mercy. And thank you for our gifts that each one of us have, Father. I just pray that we have open minds, hearts, souls to listen and renew our minds, renew our thought processes, and maybe give a little bit to submit ourselves to the gifting that you've given us. I know you talk to us all in different ways, Father. So I just pray that we have open ears to hear what you have for us. In Jesus' name, amen.
There's something about ownership of vision and ownership of faith. It's a process. And before it can be transferred, it must be tested. So I want to speak from that perspective today in 2 Kings chapter 2. I want to read from verse 9, and I'll go on down until I feel like I've given you enough of the context to say what I want to say from this passage. But 2 Kings chapter 2 says, "When they had crossed, Elijah said to Elisha, 'Tell me, what can I do for you before I am taken from you?'" Kind of a blank check of sorts in terms of the currency of faith. His response is interesting because the protege of Elijah, who has a name that's annoyingly similar to Elijah, it's just a couple letters off and makes it hard to preach because you always mess them up and I have to think about it every time. Elijah and Elisha. Elisha comes second. I wrote a book about Elisha, and I still mess it up all the time. I have to remember that the J comes before the S in the alphabet, and that's how I remember Elijah and then Elisha, so that's how I do it. And I have a son named Elijah, too, which is not relevant to this text that I'm trying to read. He responds in a way that God honors. "Let me inherit a double portion of your spirit." Isn't it interesting that he didn't ask Elijah for his stuff? He asked him for his spirit. Do most of our prayers revolve around stuff that we want or the substance of who we want to become? Most of our endeavors, most of our goals, are they more oriented around what we hope to acquire and accumulate or who we hope to be? He said, "You don't have to give me a thing that you have. I want who you are. Because once I understand how God thinks, I can access everything that God has. But if I just get what God has, but I don't understand how God thinks, I'll waste what he gives me, like the son who took the inheritance and outside of the father's house because he didn't have the mindset of the father, but he had an attitude of a servant toward a master. It was a matter of time before the stuff outran the substance. And when the stuff outruns the substance, the stuff will disappear. But if you can be a person of substance, you can handle stuff. And it's no problem for God to get you stuff if you'll work on your substance." And so Elisha is on it. And he's been following Elijah for 6 years, and he knows something about what it takes to be in ministry, but not everything. Because Elijah responds, "You have asked a difficult thing, yet if you see me when I'm taken from you, it will be yours. Otherwise, it will not." Touch somebody next to you and tell them, "What you see is what you get." So if you see me at that transition point, if you're still following to the finish, the way you end this season will determine the way that you begin the next one. If you finish the task, you'll get it. If you're there and you see me off in the end, then you'll begin where I finished. And good parents know this, that your kids get to start where you finished. They get to stand on your shoulders. It's a goal of life. I tell my mom, not often enough, but I try to tell her sometimes, you know, thank you for letting me preach. Your sacrifice is directly connected to my success. He said, if you stay close and you see me when I'm taken, you'll stand on my shoulders and my finish line will be your starting point. To those of you who are new to our church, we started with much less than this, but you're inheriting the sacrifice of other people, and your start was their finish. So they did everything that they did to get us to this point, and now you get to jump in and just start here. This is not a bad place to start. 11 campuses meeting right now all across the Charlotte area. Come on, this is not a bad place to start. And as they were walking along, 11, and talking together, suddenly a chariot of fire and horses appeared and separated the two of them. And Elijah went up to heaven in a whirlwind. And Elisha saw this and cried out, my father, the chariots and horsemen of Israel, which always represent battle. And there's an external battle symbol, but there's an internal battle happening too. How do I now continue on without the only leader that I've ever known? Some of you are asking in your life right now, how do I continue on without the only love I've ever known? How do I continue on without the only security that I've ever known? How do I continue on without the only friends that I've ever known? And in this moment of transition, it says that Elisha saw him no more, and he took hold of his garment and tore it in two. Rather than give us a description of how Elisha felt, it gives us a demonstration to say that some things that happen in your life will rip your heart in two. And you won't even know who you are anymore. And part of you will be here, and part of you will be there, and part of you will be clinging to the past, and part of you will be wondering about the future. And so, torn apart, Elisha then picked up Elijah's cloak that had fallen from him, and he went back. Sometimes you got to go back before you can go forward. And stood on the bank of the Jordan, which represents transition, and he took the cloak that had fallen from Elijah and struck the water with it, and he says something that we're going to try to answer today. Where now is the Lord, the God of Elijah? And when he struck the water, it divided to the right and to the left, and he crossed over, but not without a cost. He crossed over into his purpose, but not without a cost. So I want to speak for just a few moments around this thought. I want to talk about the hidden cost of a high calling. The hidden cost of a high calling. I need you to pray for me. Our family has been going through a lot. My kids secretly met recently and decided that they wanted a dog. And concurrent with this decision, they also have apparently made the decision to make my life miserable until I say yes. Now, let me tell you why my kids don't deserve a dog. They're lazy. They're irresponsible. They don't know how to shut doors. I've been sharing this with people, and people are so nosy, you know? Get your kids a dog, man. What's wrong with you? Get your kids a dog. What's your problem? Get your kids a dog. Like, people are calling DSS because I won't get my kid a dog. But let me tell you something. There are dog families, people who love dogs, people who love pets. And then there are families that love the concept of pets. And what I know that they don't know, especially Graham, because he's the most manipulative one of the whole bunch. He's the middle child. He has these puppy dog eyes. He has this raspy voice. Abby's probably more charming, but Graham has had like 3 more years in the system. learning how to work me. And so Graham is the ambassador, Graham's the spokesman. And every day for the last, I would say 2 weeks, it's been going on longer than that, but it's been daily for 2 weeks, I am greeted with, can I get a dog? I am sent off to work with, can I get a dog? I'm greeted again when I come home with, can I get a dog? I'm joined at bedtime for, can I get a dog? And I want to declare into the camera today that I'm going to stand strong against the devil's scheme. See, because I've had a dog before. I've had a dog before, and I know that there is a hidden cost to pet ownership. Graham's latest thing is this: what if I pay for it? Then can I have a dog? I mean, he's drawing me pictures, he's reasoning with me, he makes dog noises, he comes into rooms on all fours. It would be adorable if it weren't so annoying and if he weren't so ignorant about what he's actually asking for. Because I know you. Yeah. And I'm trying to spare you the pain of finding your dog dead on the first day because you leave every door open. I don't want you to have to scrape, and I tell him this stuff, you know, this is what I've been reduced to. I don't want you to have to scrape your dog off the pavement. I know it's a little extreme, but desperate times call for desperate measures. His big thing now, though, is, what if I pay for it? To which I respond, you have no idea what that means. They will give you a dog for free. But that free dog, in the lifetime of the dog's lifetime, is going to cost you, you know, tens of thousands of dollars. What if I pay for it? What if I pay for it? I'm not so worried about you paying for the initial cost of dog ownership. I'm worried about what you're going to do about what the dog's going to put on my cushions of my couch that I paid for. Who's going to call somebody to clean that up? That's what I want to know. Because a dog as a concept is cute. A dog as a commitment is something else altogether. My kids like the concept of a dog, because they've never had a dog. And I'm venting to you right now. But I'm also illustrating what we read in the text and what we experience in our lives. Some things are a lot cuter in concept than they are once the commitment is required. Graham likes the idea of a dog. Some of you like the idea of marriage. Because you've never had to clean up any messes in a real marriage. You only watched rom-coms. And a rom-com gives a concept of romance. It isn't very realistic. Some pastors that I meet like the idea of a growing church. The idea of a growing ministry. I sat down with a person in the church one time who was upset over all the people who come to the church but don't live holy. Because this person, you know, lives holy all the time. First thing that makes me want to do is put a hidden camera on you, by the way, when you talk like that, because I can find something real quick. If I can mic you and watch you for a day, you will shut up about everybody else who's not holy. I found that out. But the second thing it made me want to do is question, why did you come here in the first place? You know we're a church that's about reaching out. Oh, you like the concept of outreach. You like the concept of it. But once concept becomes commitment, it creates a separation between the dog lovers and the dog wanters, between the kids and the dads, between those who are actually going to be cleaning up after this thing and those who are just going to get it dirty. Okay? Well, think about that a little bit, and I'll see you next week. I've really preached already, but to take this a little bit further, let's ask Elijah why he said what he said to Elisha in verse 10. He said, you have asked a difficult thing. In some ways, I think he's saying, you have no clue what you're getting yourself into. I would love for the verse to be up there again, because some of you are asking God for a destiny with absolutely no idea of the difficulty that will accompany that destiny. Asking God, can I have a husband? Can I have a husband? Can I have a kid? Can I have a kid? Can I have a job? Can I have a job? Can I have a church? Can I have a church? In concept, it's sexy. I think calling is one of those ideas. Yeah, that's good. I think calling is one of those ideas that's so much cuter when you're looking at it through the window. How much is that doggy in the window? The one that will destroy my house. But you don't see that in the window. You don't see that in the window. And there's a hidden cost to every calling. A hidden cost, like on your phone bill. I thought it was $69.99 a month. Yes, but that doesn't include the you got screwed charge. See, it's down there at the bottom. You've asked a difficult thing, but it's not impossible. Here's what you got to do. You got to stay close. Now, one thing about an opportunity that God will give you is that with every opportunity, there will always be several off-ramps where you'll have to decide, do I really want it? Do I really want it? Every opportunity has off-ramps, and they are always well-marked. Okay? Let me explain this in terms of what I do every week. The creative process of developing a sermon takes a toll. Somebody asked me, is it more stressful to preach at your church or other churches? Because I was preaching at two different churches this week and then came back late in the night to preach here and all that. And there's nowhere I'd rather be than here, but I said, well, it's harder here. Well, that was you that asked me, Elijah. That was you. He asked me that last night. And I said, it's harder at home. They know all my stuff. You go somewhere else, you're a magician. Just throwing ninja stars everywhere. It's like everything you've ever learned about God in 40 minutes. They think you're brilliant. You go home. Here, the creative process can take a toll. And from week to week, if I could just show you this, like to preach to you today, I scribbled through this many pages of possible titles for this message. The titles. That's the titles I didn't use that I wrote down in the notebook. There's another list of them in my phone. Different titles. Let's look at a few. I'm going to preach that one next week, so I can't tell you that. So you got to learn how to save the scraps. Mm-hmm. The purpose of pursuit, I thought I might call it. The happiness of pursuit. Because Elijah ran after Elisha. And we talk about the pursuit of happiness. But real joy is found in the journey, not the destination. And then I put it in, and it was already a book on Amazon, so I couldn't use that. Curse you, Google. Just all kind of stuff. You can't get the right reward if you do it for the wrong reason. That's too long. When chasers cheat. I can't give you all of these. But I want you to see that to get to the title that I gave you, which is the message I believe God gave me, it came through all those pages to get to this one. And I wrote this one in my car this morning. The final one. But it took me, every time I get ready to preach, it's like I'm chasing down the connection that God wants me to make for you. And I take that seriously. And I've learned something about the process is that when I feel the urge to quit, that's a sign that I'm close. When I feel the urge to quit, I write songs with the worship team. And One thing they can tell you about me, and I don't, you guys haven't seen it before, but the guys that write with us a lot could have seen it before. My strength that I bring to songwriting is my persistence. Okay, not my technical ability to know what's a stable note and an unstable note. None of that, but just the ability to say we can get that line better. We can get that line better. And sometimes that persistence can be a real pain. I know for the guys. But they put up with me. The song that we've been singing in the church lately, and you may be watching this later on TV, so you may have no idea what I'm talking about, but there's a song that's really been blessing our church where we sing, "The Resurrected King Has Resurrected Me." And it's really blessed our church. And 15,000 people sang it recently in the arena, and it was a powerful moment. I mean, I'm telling you, like heaven came down. But I almost threw that song away because we couldn't get it just right. And I wonder what you're close to throwing away, close to quitting on, that if you could reinterpret the intensity of your urge to quit, you might see it as a sign that you're close. There will always be an off-ramp at every opportunity, and the off-ramps will increase the closer you get to the destination. How do I know that? Okay. On the day that God took Elijah away from Elisha. See how slow I had to say that to make sure I got it right. On the day that Elijah left, it was the day that Elisha received the greatest power. Now think about this. The greatest pain and the greatest power came to him all in the same day. The greatest pain and the greatest power all came together, packaged together, all in this one event. Now look at 2 Kings chapter 2, verse 1. You got it? Yes, that one. When the Lord was about to take Elijah up to heaven, so he's about to take Elijah up, pain, and he's about to bring to fruition what Elisha's been training for 6 years. He followed Elijah, and he poured water on Elijah's hands. He was his servant, attending to the little things. But on the day that the Lord was about to take Elijah up, Elijah and Elisha were on their way from Gilgal. Watch what happens next. It proves what I was just trying to tell you. Elijah said to Elisha, "Stay here." Now, wait a minute. If he doesn't follow him, he can't get the calling. He can't walk in the fullness of what he's supposed to do. And it's not the devil that tells him to turn around. It's the man of God. It's like God is giving him one last off-ramp to say, "Are you sure you want this?" It reminds me of your dad on our wedding day. Holly told me this later, that he pulled her aside and said, "Now, I know all these people are here." This was moments before the ceremony. "I know all these people are here. I know we paid a lot of money. But if you don't want to marry that dude, I will walk out right now. And I'll tell all of them the wedding's off. And you won't even have to look at them. You just tell me the word." That's what I unofficially call, just in my heart and my mind, the potential worst decision of her life. Because I think we can all agree that I am the best decision of her life. So the decision to call it off would have been the worst decision of her life. And she said, "Amen." That's how I measure success, when she says amen to a statement like that. So, amen. But I'm saying, it's kind of like that. Elijah, not the devil, Elijah, the one he's following, says, "Hey, if you want to leave off here, it's okay, because it's a difficult thing to fulfill destiny. You've been watching me do it, but it's not as easy as I've made it look." I'll let you preach next Sunday. And you know what you'll do if I let you preach next Sunday? You'll pray for me more the next Sunday. One time I co-hosted a radio show with a friend of mine named Clayton King. Every week I'll go in and co-host the show with him. Co-host. One week his flight got canceled, so I had to host. Let me tell you, host is way different than co-host. Co-host just says, "Yes, Clayton, I agree." Co-host talks 30 seconds every 10 minutes. But once I had to field the call, I called him right after the show. I said, "Man, it is not as easy. I thought we were doing the same thing all this time. I kind of put myself like you couldn't do it without me. But when you gave me that main microphone and there was nothing between me and the crazy callers but my brain, I realized you had been buffering me. There will come a time, by the way, teenagers, where you'll say to your parents, it's not as easy as you made it look. When you get your own dog, you will look at your parents and say, letting me live, just letting me live, not even what you taught me, just the fact that you let me stay alive was way harder. I was expecting parental backup at this point. It's not as easy as you made it look. Putting food on the table and providing and being there for me and being patient with me is not as easy as you made it look. And Elisha's about to find out that parting water is much more difficult than pouring it. And he's about to go from the concept of calling to the commitment of calling. And Elijah says, are you sure? And God says, are you sure? And life will say, are you sure? And life will give you opportunity after opportunity after opportunity to quit on the path of your obedience. But Elisha's cool. He says, no, man, not a chance. I didn't follow you 6 years to stop now. I didn't go through all the stuff that we went through and give up everything I gave up to turn around now, at this moment. I didn't leave my, I need to show you this. If I don't show you this, you won't understand. Okay? Because to understand somebody's commitment to their calling, you kind of have to understand where they came from. So look at 1 Kings chapter 19, verse 19. This is 6 years earlier. And Elijah is running from the chariots of Ahab and Jezebel. They're trying to kill him, but God says, hey, stop, you're running from the wrong chariots. I want you to turn around and go in the other direction. And I want you to find Elisha, and he's going to be your successor. Because God always has a succession plan. It took me a minute, but I got it out. God always has something next for you. Everybody say next. But what's next is always connected to what's now. You have to understand that, or you'll live in the imagination of what's next. Can I get a dog? 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 To which I say, can you get along with your sister? In fact, Graham, get along with Abby for 2 weeks and Elijah for one day. And we'll talk about a dog. There's always a test before transition. Now, I want you to understand that Elisha wasn't really even looking for a calling. He was simply committed to the season of his life that he was in, and God knows how to find you in all of that. And so in verse 19, 1 Kings 19, it says, Elijah went from there and found Elisha, son of Shaphat, and he was plowing. Okay, what does prophecy have to do with plowing? Everything. Both require how you till up hard stuff. He's tilling hard dirt, and he's going to be tilling hard hearts. And so what you're doing now, even if it doesn't seem to be connected to what's next, there's always a connection, you know? Waxing on and waxing off is fighting. Painting the fence is learning to block. There's always a connection between what's next and what's now. When I meet with our interns, thank you, one person who's spiritual enough to understand the depth and appreciate the quality of what I'm saying. I wrote this message for you. When I meet with our interns, I meet with them once every class. I meet with them. I say, ask anything. And they always ask me something about calling. And they might not use the word calling, but it always comes up, the concept of calling. How do I know my calling? How do I prepare for my calling? How do I step into my calling? All this stuff. No matter how they ask it, I'm kind of like a politician in this way. I always answer it the way I want to answer it. So I think I could do really good in a debate, a presidential debate. Because no matter what they ask, I have a standard thing that I say. I always tell them that what you're doing now and how you do it now is the most important thing about what God will give you next. And I say that in this season of your life, the temptation is going to be for you to run after what you think is next and neglect what God is doing now. But if you neglect what God is doing now, trying to get to what God is doing next, even if you get to what's next, you won't have what you need, because what you need is what God is doing now. So you can get to next and not have the strength that you need for the next season because you were not faithful in now. Where now is the God of Elijah? Where did Elijah find Elisha? He found him in the field. He found him sweating. He found him plowing. He found him in the mundane, not the miraculous. He himself was driving the 12th pair of oxen. He wasn't even at the front of the line. He wasn't even the first guy. I don't know. I'm just trying to speak to somebody who's been asking God to show you your calling, and God wants to show you the cloak. Because it says that Elijah went up to him. And listen how he does this, okay? This is the guy that's going to be the successor for the prophetic ministry that's the hope of the nation. No conversation, no career fair. He walks by him, and there's this hairy animal skin thing called a cloak. And he walks by him, and he goes, and he keeps walking. Okay? Write this down. Purpose doesn't have a parking spot. It always passes by. Purpose doesn't park itself at your front door and say, I'm ready when you are. Purpose comes riding by with the cloak of a calling and says, here you go, and moves on and wants to see, will you run after it? Will you run after it? Will you chase it? You know, you see people fulfilling their calling, and you have no idea the chase that it took them to get to their calling. Our main producer of our worship songs, you know him, you love him. He's Mac Brock, everybody. The one with the hat. I know they all look alike. The one with the hat that he wears down low. The one who, he does a chop, this chop thing when he leads worship. He's chopping the devil, Daniel's son. He's chopping. He produces all our music. You know how I met him? At a youth rally. You know how many kids were there? Not many. Didn't count. But it wasn't very big. But God can find you in the field. God can find you in a small place if you have a big gift and a big heart. When I met him, he was leading worship, and I didn't even like the songs he was singing. They were too sad, too slow. I don't know where he is right now. He was in the other two, but he's back at stage somewhere doing something. Probably watching me on a monitor right now. I mean, I wish I could tell you that the way that Matt came onto the team, there's actually a funny story behind it. I wish I could tell you that it was like this nice, neat little story. But actually what happened was, Matt is leading worship at this thing. I liked him and his wife is named Meredith. She's a wonderful person. But Meredith is very straightforward. Now, that's going to become important to the story in about 23 seconds. So Meredith is very straightforward. And we're sitting down having dinner, and Mac brought up how when I preached, he felt something. And he said, in this church that you're building, this is 8 years ago, maybe nine, in this church that you're building, which is very small, there was nothing really to see, he said, I would love to come lead worship if you need me. And we did need worship leaders because I was leading the worship at that time. I was the worship leader and the preacher. So I do, you know, my worship thing, put the guitar down, preaching thing, you know, just like that. Did it all. And I was tired of doing it all. So I said, I would love to have you. Well, he goes off at some point in the conversation and goes to the bathroom, and me and Meredith keep talking. And she said, you know, well, how does it work? I said, well, we send out the set list to the worship leader that's coming in, you know, like a couple weeks in advance, and we tell them what songs to play. So that's how we do it. And she said, oh, well, I know my husband. He would never do that. That's not how he does it. And so I was like, well, I know Elevation Church. And this is how we do it. So if that's not how he does it, this is how we do it. And your husband's not going to lead worship at Elevation Church. And then, you know, we finished the meal and I left. I'm driving away in my Jeep Cherokee. I see this emo rocker kid with a hat. I don't know if he had a hat at the time, but let's put a hat on him. Running after me. Now, this part is true. Chasing my Jeep Cherokee in the parking lot. I stop. I say, Mac. And he's out of breath because he's never done any cardiovascular conditioning in his life. He goes, "Hey, Meredith just told me what she said to you in there. And normally she would be right. But he used the word, he said, but when I hear you preach, I feel called. I feel called." And so what made him chase my Cherokee that day was not his comfort and what he was comfortable with. And it wasn't his convenience and what he was used to. It was a calling. And it was passing by. And it wasn't even how successful this was, because it wasn't successful yet. But let me tell you something. If he wouldn't have chased down my Cherokee in that parking lot in Columbia, South Carolina, he wouldn't have been standing on the stage at Time Warner Arena in Charlotte changing the world. And God said it's time for somebody to chase an opportunity and quit waiting on it to come to you, because it's passing by. Elijah said, "Here, you want it? Let's go. You want it? You want to do it? You want a wife? Take somebody out to a nice restaurant. A nice one where they bring you the food." I'm so sick of single ladies in this church telling me they can't find a good man at Elevation. I'm not mad at them. I'm mad at you little boys. You better find a good woman that loves God and quit playing around with all these little girls that aren't fit to be a wife yet. And you better find a mature woman. You know what I tell Elijah? Come here. What's the one piece of advice I tell you? If you ever
find a woman like mommy, marry her even if you have to kill someone.
Come on, that's good parenting. They all put me on focus on the family. I'll straighten all this. What am I trying to say? I'm saying that a high calling is reserved for those who are close enough to catch it. If you see me when I'm taken up, you can have it. Now, the funny thing about the mantle is 6 years earlier, Elijah walked by him and gave it to him and then took it back. Because if he gave him the ability to work miracles without the maturity to support it, it would implode. But it's 6 years later, and Elisha has proven his willingness to chase. And so when the chariots of change come and take Elijah away, Elisha knows just what to do. Now see, he has two options at this point. He can chase the chariots that are taking Elijah away, and he can remember the way things used to be. Were y'all standing because you thought I was done? I'm not. I'm not. But he's standing there. Let's go back to the scene. As they were walking along, so now he's gone from running after Elijah to walking along with him. Walking along. And so often purpose isn't fulfilled in our lives because we start out running hard. But we don't know how to walk it out over this 6 year period. And it has to start as a run, but then it develops into a walk where it's just about the consistency of your calling. It's about waking up every day and feeding the dog and walking the dog. Sometimes we want a dog that we're not willing to walk. Sometimes we want a calling that we're not willing to commit to. And that's why Elijah said, "You got to see me when I'm taken up. When I hit you with the cloak, you followed me and you ran. But now I need to know if you're going to chase after those chariots." The chariots represent what's spectacular, you know. And chariots come and they take him away, and he's crying about it. And he says, "My father, the chariots and horsemen of Israel. Look at verse 12b. And Elisha saw him no more. Everybody say never again. I see three dynamics at work in the passage. I see never again. That's what leaves your life that you can't get back. How many have a never again in your life? Could be a person, could be a dream, could be a stage, could be an age of your kids. Never again are they going to be 12. Never again. They're 21 now. You're now just a consultant. A consultant at best. A consultant that does not get paid. A consultant that paid to be a consultant. What were we thinking? Should have never got a dog. But can you now adjust? Can you? Never again. Some things just don't work anymore. Never again am I going to know everybody's name in the church. I'd love to. I would love to know your name. I swear, there are people in this church, and you guys are kind of in, up here at the front, you kind of sit in the same place every week. And I try to figure out all the time, how can I get to know them? Because they look so cool. I think that all the time. And there would have been a time where it would have been easy to find out. But now they're at all the campuses, everything. I'm never going to get the pastor that way again. If I stood here trying to know everybody's name, the ministry would be done growing if I tried to chase that chariot. So your ability to embrace the change and to say, well, it's never going to be like that again. I'm not single anymore. Now I have something that I need to come home to responsibly. If I keep acting like I'm single, I'm going to sabotage this season called married. So there's never again, and there's next. Elijah, never again. The Jordan River represents what's next. That's what he crossed over into. He performed twice as many miracles as Elijah. He got what he asked for. The reason that he got what he asked for, and the reason that he completed his calling, is because of what he did in verse 13. In verse 12, he tore his garment in two. That represents never again. But in verse 13, he picked up Elijah's cloak. See, anything that God takes away from your life, look for what was left behind. And that's what you need to go forward into what's next. I'll never again see Elijah's face. And the next thing that I have to do is difficult. But what I have now, will still work. It's that same cloak that 6 years ago was enough to bring me out of the fields. And it's that same cloak that served as a mantle, as a sign of authority, that God was doing something new in my life. I mean, do you ever go back to the place of passion, that place that started you out pursuing your wife, that place that started you out pursuing God? That place that made you want to be a dad or start the business or be in the company in the first place. Do you ever go back to that place? I believe when Elisha picked up the cloak and he was standing in front of what was new and standing in front of what was next, which was also unfamiliar, and he could have run after Elijah, because that's what all the other prophets did. They said, let's go look for him. Maybe God picked him up and put him down somewhere else. And Elisha said, well, you could go look, but I'm telling you, he's not there. I'm telling you, it's over. And I'm telling some of you on behalf of God today, you're not going to find it looking there. You're not going to find it looking on her Facebook page. It's over. She's gone. But he picked up where Elijah left off. He picked up. Oh, this feels familiar. This feels familiar. This is my cloak. This is my calling. And I'm at a different stage. In a different situation, but I got the. It says in the Bible that Elijah, when he struck the water before he left, he rolled up the cloak. And some of y'all are used to rolling up some other stuff, but we're in church now. So keep your mind where it belongs. It says he rolled up the cloak. And I can't prove that Elisha did it, but you can't prove that he didn't. I believe he stood there with the cloak for a minute and remembered how far God had brought him from the fields and remembered the sacrifice that he had made when he put his oxen to death and burned his plows and no turning back. And I believe he stood in the pain of what he would never see again and stood in the uncertainty of what was next. And he held on to what was now. And when he cried out, "Where now is the God of Elijah?" I think he was swinging the cloak. I do. I think he was taking some practice licks, you know, because I got to make sure this thing works because a lot of people are watching. It says 50 prophets were standing at a distance. Now, the reason that they couldn't walk in the calling that Elisha could walk in is because they were standing at a distance. They weren't close enough to catch it. And if you don't stay close to God, and if you don't stay close to the right people, and if you don't stay close and in tune to what God has put in you, you won't be there to catch it. But Elisha was the only one that when Elijah went up, he was there to catch the cloak when it came down. He was the only one that when the transition happened, he had passed the test. And now that the transition has happened, and now that I've cried over what I've lost, it's time for me to pick up what I have left. And now that I've been through 6 years of following, I heard a preacher say one time, "Don't stop on six." And it's been 6 years, and I've been following, and I've been pouring water, and I had my opportunities to quit. But now I've poured enough water, I think I'm ready to part it. And he picked up that cloak, and Elijah's last miracle became Elisha's first miracle. And he picked up where Elijah left off. And God is saying to somebody today, let's pick up where you left off. I know you wasted some time, but what you need is lying right in front of you. And if you'll pick it up and wind it up, I'm going to make a way even now. I'm going to make a way through the Jordan. I got this transition covered. I got this trouble accounted for. God, are you feeling this word?
You guys enjoy that this morning? Some good stuff. Come on up. I'll call it an abbreviated worship team. We're going to set some time up for ministry. But man, that's true what he's saying. You can get what's next, but if you're not prepared for it, there's a big chance for failure. And I know, I didn't know what I was going to say when I got up here, but I do now. I was playing music in bars, sponsored by Budweiser, doing a bunch of things that I'm not doing now. But it took my wife kicking me in the butt, said, "Hey, God's called you for some different things." And then I went out, tried something new. I'm like, let me sing for this Jesus I believe in. And it wasn't comfortable for me. It was new, but God rewarded that. And I'm not here now. I'm prepared for this. I was going to say, I'm not here now by overnight. I served at some other churches leading worship, and that prepared me to deal with, there's different personalities that you have to deal with when you're in leadership. There's certain patience that you have to have. I wouldn't have had that if I just jumped right in. And I would have fallen on my face, and I couldn't do what God called me to do. And I just want to put a word out there for Pastor Mike. He's not here, but he's taking care of the now. I know he personally loves each and every one of you, and he likes to talk and meet with each and every one of you. And God promises, if you take care of what I give you, I will bless you with more. So Mike is... he is doing that now, and I say that because God's given a lot of the leadership team and different people in the church visions of what Epic Life is to become, and we're reaching out in that in faith, and we've purchased land. We put an offer out. It was accepted. So we got land, and now we're going to build, and we're doing all these things, but we need the people of the church to... God has called each one of you. He's talking to your heart, and he needs you. We need you. Not just the church, but the community of Terrell and the surrounding. God's given you everyone a gift, and if it's serving, serve. And if when you the first thing you jump into, if it doesn't work, you'll never know unless you try.